ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 3, Text Number 23, The Liberation from the Illusory Energy.
Sarvato manasa sangham,
sarvato manasa sangham,
ado sangham sa sadhusu,
ado sangham sa sadhusu,
dayam maitrim prasayam cha,
dayam maitrim dayam cha,
bhuteshvadayato chitam,
bhuteshvadayato chitam,
sarvata,
sarvata,
everywhere. Manasa,
manasa,
of the mind,
of the mind,
asangam,
asangam,
attachment,
attachment,
ado,
ado,
in the beginning,
in the beginning,
sangam,
sangam,
association,
association,
cha, cha,
and
sarushu,
sarushu,
with saintly person,
with saintly
person,
dayam,
mercy, maitrim,
maitrim,
friendship,
friendship,
prashayam,
prashayam,
reverence,
reverence,
cha,
cha,
and
bhuteshu,
bhuteshu, for all living beings,
for all living beings,
atha,
thus,
yitaruchitam,
yitaruchitam,
as is suitable,
as is suitable.
Translation. A sincere disciple should learn to disassociate the mind from everything material and positively cultivate association with his spiritual master and other saintly devotees. He should be merciful to those in an inferior position to him, cultivate friendship with those on an equal level, and meekly serve those in a higher spiritual position. Thus he should learn to deal properly with all living beings. Purport. Srila Madhvacharya has quoted from the Guru Purana to demonstrate that within this universe, those who take birth as demigods, great rishis or pious human beings are all considered santaha or saintly persons. According to Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavanya Vishavena, the Varnashrama culture described in the Vedic literature deals mostly with the living entities who are struggling within the three modes of material nature. The Vedic literatures teach such conditioned souls that material happiness can be achieved only through pious works. In this sense, the demigods are to be considered the most pious living entities within the three modes of material nature. The rishis are the great saintly mystics of the universe who are able to travel at will to various planets and who cultivate mystic powers are to be considered somewhat below the demigods. And those human beings on earth who perfectly execute the Vedic rituals are to be considered in the third or lowest category of santaha or saintly persons. But a devotee of the Lord is beyond the three modes of material nature. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 14:26, Namsayo vyabhicharina bhakti yogin sevate sāvanāṁ samadhi-cetan bhāma-bhūjaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down in any circumstance, at once transcends the mode of its human nature and thus comes to the level of Brahmanas. Thus Lord Krishna clearly says that the Vaishnava who does not fall down from the regulations of the Bhakti Yoga is beyond the three modes of nature. And Lord Krishna advised Arjuna, a Krishna Bhaktya, to transcend the three material qualities of the illusory creation Maya, Nishtragunya Bhavarjuna. But in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, 1840, the Lord says, Na tatasti vidivyam cha jividevishu vapunaha satvam prakriti thayaramuktam nyaravi satravivunai. There is no being existing either here or among the demigods in the higher planetary systems who is free from the three modes of material nature. Thus the demigods are not exempt from the pollution of the three modes of material nature, whereas a pure devotee actually becomes unachita or transcendental in the influence of mind. Therefore, one who cultivates association of the ultima adhikari or pure devotee of the Lord, as stated previously in verse 21, Tasmat gurum prapadita jigasu se ultimam sabde kare cha nishnattam brahman upasya asayam. Therefore, any person who seriously desires real happiness
must seek a bona fide spiritual master and take shelter of him by initiation. The qualification of a bona fide spiritual master is that he has realized the conclusions of the scriptures by deliberation and is able to convince others of these conclusions. Such great personalities who have taken shelter of the Supreme Godhead, leaving aside all material considerations, should be understood to be bona fide spiritual masters. On the other hand, one should avoid the association of a materialistic person, even if such a person is outwardly chanting the holy names of Krishna. Srila Rupa Goswami has advised in this respect. Krishnati yasya vidhitam namasadrita dikshasti chet pranati vichyaratanantam visham sushushaya vajam vijam alanyam manya nindari sunya vidam dipshita sangha lamya. One may mentally offer respect to any living entity who is chanting the holy name of Krishna, but one should avoid intimate association with materialistic persons, especially those attached to sex enjoyment. Tamodavaram yushitam sangi sangam. If one associates with a sensuous person who is attached to the company of women, by such association one will surely go to hell. But if a materialistic person approaches a pure devotee with a sincere desire to hear from him about spiritual improvement, that first-class devotee may mercifully give his association, provided the purpose of such a meeting is advancement in the devotional service of Krishna. By such association, even a materialistic person can gradually become a pure devotee of Krishna. If an advanced devotee is not able to engage a materialistic person in the devotional service of Krishna, such association is strictly forbidden. In the Garuda Purana it is said, Yashishitaha Sadromeshu Vina Sangam Namuchite Sahishishu Tu Deveshu Vina Sangam Napurite. One cannot be liberated without association with a pure devotee of the Lord. And unless one shows mercy to those in an inferior position, one's life will be superficial. It is our practical experience in the Krishna consciousness movement that those who are expanding their mercy by preaching the message of Krishna are making rapid spiritual progress, and their life is filled with transcendental bliss. Those who neglect the quality of mercy, being uninterested in the missionary activities of the Krishna consciousness movement, are not filled with transcendental pleasure as described here by the word Puriyate. Not being filled with spiritual pleasure, surely such persons attempt to fill their lives with material pleasure through sense gratification and mental speculation, associated with women or reading innumerable mundane novels, newspapers, news magazines, and so on. According to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the preaching activities of the Krishna consciousness movement are anandam vivaranam, the ever-increasing ocean of bliss. Missionary activities are based on the principle of dayam, or mercy to those who have fallen. Those who actively preaching become enlightened by association with other preachers. This principle is called maitrim, or friendship among equals. The power to carry out such preaching activities, as well as the proper guidance for distributing Krishna's message, comes through the principle of prayasaya, or humble service of the lotus feet of the spiritual authorities, such as the spiritual master. If one preaches Krishna consciousness sincerely under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master and in the company of fellow preachers, one is perfectly fulfilling the statement of this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, and thus he will come to the point of sarvatam and sarvatangam, or complete attainment on the illusory energy of the Lord. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has stated, Lavamatra sarasanga sarasiddhi hoya. By becoming attached to the devotees of the Lord, one will achieve all perfection in life, going back home, back to Godhead. If one neglects the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by engaging in sinful life, he is certainly not merciful. One who ignores his eternal status as part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and who instead covers himself more and more with material illusions in the form of temporary designations, I am American, I am Russian, I am Indian, I am black, I am white, and so on, is certainly a killer of his own soul and cannot be considered merciful. Similarly, those who support animals slaughtered by eating meat, fish and eggs cannot be considered merciful. Sometimes the argument is given that if one does not harm others, he is perfectly religious. But because we are now in a state of ignorance, we have no idea whatsoever of the future reactions to our present activities. ignorantly boasting that one is not harming others without an awareness of the subtle laws of nature does not make one a religious person. One becomes religious by surrendering to the laws of God as they are stated by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita. As long as a living entity is infatuated with his own mental speculations which carry him away like the waves of the ocean, he cannot understand the process of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mental speculations based on our experience of the variegated creations of the Lord's illusory energy are incapable of bringing us to perfect knowledge. One must give up materialistic association and make company with pure devotees of the Lord who are engaged 24 hours a day in perfectly pleasing the Supreme Lord. One should cultivate association with those who are more advanced than oneself in devotional service. One's advancement can be measured by one's detachment from sense gratification and his ability to distribute Krishna consciousness to others. In this connection, Srila Narottam Das Thakur has said, Chadiya Vaishnava Seva Nishtara Paiti Kiva. Who can attain salvation if he gives up the service of the Vaishnavas? By serving the lotus feet of pure devotees, one is immediately enlightened with spiritual knowledge. All of the so-called pleasures in the material world, culminating many varieties of sexual fantasy and impersonal visions of oneself as God, become useless to one who has achieved the mercy of the lotus feet of a pure devotee of Krishna. The entire material creation is compared to an insignificant bubble in the ocean. The material universe rests on the spiritual potency of the Lord called Brahma Jyoti, just as an insignificant bubble rests on the potency of the unlimited ocean. By serving the lotus feet of the pure devotee, one can enter the ocean of eternal happiness and experience his constitutional position as a servant of Krishna. The mercy of the Vaishnava is unlimited, and one who has tasted that mercy becomes mad after the lotus feet of Krishna, not caring for the hallucinations of so-called material pleasure or mental speculation. The mercy of the Vaishnava is substantial and as powerful as Krishna himself, whereas in personal speculations and hopeless dreams of society, friendship and love merely constitute various means by which Maya cheats the conditioned souls and keeps them in perpetual frustration. I'll read the verse again. A sincere disciple should learn to disassociate the mind from everything material and positively cultivate association with his spiritual master and other saintly devotees. He should be merciful to those in an inferior position to him, cultivate friendship with those on an equal level, and meekly serve those in a higher spiritual position. Thus he should learn to deal properly with all living beings. Because today is the disappearance of Srinivas Acharya. It's always very significant, the particular verses that Krishna arranges that we speak on these holy days celebrating great Vaishnavas. So, one way to understand this verse is to hear about the life of Srinivasacharya, who, as described in the purport here, literally embodies everything that is stated here. So we'll describe a little bit about the life of Srinivasacharya, different principles here, disassociating the mind from everything materially, positively cultivating association with the spiritual master and other saintly devotees, being merciful to those in an inferior position, cultivating friendship with those on an equal level, and meekly serving those in a higher spiritual position, and thus dealing properly with all living entities. So we'll see as we discuss the life of Srinivas how each of those is perfectly emulated in the life of the Vaishnava. of course, there are two types of Bhagavat. There is the book Bhagavat, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and then there is the person Bhagavat. And both are very important, but really without the example of the person Bhagavat, it is very difficult for one to actually understand and to get a real grasp or a real feeling for what the Bhagavatam is saying. But as soon as we hear, you know, or see the light of the Bhagavat, then we can, it's just everything becomes crystal clear. So, Srinivas Acharya, his, there were, just to sum up in the beginning, there were a few principal achievements that he is particularly known for in our Sampradaya. One is that he, along with Narottama Das Thakur and Shyamananda, they led the first book distribution party in the history of Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Very significant. After the Goswamis had written all, you know, their books, most of them, except the Jiva Goswami, had literally departed this world. And they went on the Sankirtan party to distribute the books. And they also together organized the first Gaupaneem festival in Navadvip, Mayapur, big festival, so which we're still, you know, following in their footsteps, celebrating that every year. Srinivas Acharya, he also had a particular style of kirtan, he originated his own style, which is called Manahar Sai, a very, very beautiful style of kirtan. Delivered and converted King Bihambir to Vaishnavism, and that whole kingdom became the kingdom of Vaishnavas. And he also systematized the process of the Vajranandi or Manjari Baba, how to internally meditate upon the pastimes of Radha Krishna. So there are five particular prominent glories of Srinivas Acharya. He was born, actually his birth is, we'll go back to the beginning. His father's name was Kangidas, and his mother was Lakshmi Priya. And Gangadhar used to worship Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but because where he was and some family members, there was opposition from society and from the family, and therefore he used to just privately worship the Lord as an internal meditation, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But one time he decided he wanted to go and visit Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he went to Jagannath Puri. And when he was in Jagannath Puri, he met Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu greeted him, very, very happy to see him, and he asked him, now you go and offer your respects and prayers to Lord Jagannath, and then the devotees will arrange for some accommodation. So he went and he offered his prayers and respects. So then he stayed there for some time, associating with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then one day, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to his servant Govinda, he said, this couple, Kangidhar and Lakshmi Priya, they have offered prayers to Lord Jagannath to have a child, but I haven't revealed this to anyone. But since I'm not different from Lord Jagannath, I know because I heard the prayers. So, he said, they have achieved their blessing, and therefore you should ask them to return so that they can have a child. So, actually, this was the second time that Gangadhar had actually met Lord Chaitanya. The first time he went to see him when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was taking sannyas, and he saw the Vala cutting his hair and all the devotees lamenting Lord Chaitanya was taking sannyas and all these beautiful locks of hair coming on. And when he saw that, he was so emotional that all he could do was just Shri Krishna Chaitanya. He would just chant Shri Krishna Chaitanya. And when he actually went back to his village after that time, he just couldn't stop chanting Shri Krishna Chaitanya. And when his wife heard him, boys chanting Shri Krishna Chaitanya, then she started chanting Shri Krishna Chaitanya. So everywhere they would go, it was Shri Krishna Chaitanya. He was always very emotionally affected by that visit to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, they changed his name to Chaitanya Das as a nickname. So this was the second time he went to Jagannath Puri. So then, when he went back to where he resided, he did have a son, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said one of the things he said to Govinda, he was saying that he has offered a prayer and he wants a child, and he said they will have a very glorious son, and he said that I have actually empowered Rupa and Sanatana to write Bhakti Shastras, and this son that will be born, his name will be Srinivas, and he will be empowered to distribute those literatures. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu predicted that. So then, of course, after they went back and they had that child, Srinivas, he was had a beautiful golden complexion. And Lakshmi Priya, her father was an astrologer, and he did an astrological reading, and he said that this is a Mahapurush. So it's interesting because those who actually know how to do astrology properly, not like myself, but the real experts, they can also see the great transcendental personalities. As you see, even Srila Prabhupada, some astrological predictions were made. So he said he's a Mahapurush. He had all the symptoms, broad chest, arms that go down to the knees, nice long raised nose, lotus eyes like that, very, very beautiful. And when he was born, of course, his mother, she would always sing different kirtan, Hare Krishna kirtan, and kirtan, Lord Chaitanya's names, and she would always be reading stories to the child within the womb and when he was born. And then gradually, as he got to be a little child, he went to school, and he had one teacher who began to teach him all the Vedas, and that teacher was teaching him that at one stage he admitted, he said, even now this boy actually knows more than I will ever know in my whole life. He was just such a very, very great Vaishnava pundit. And actually, the goddess of learning appeared to Srinivasacharya, and she said to him also when he was a child, she said, I will fully empower you to, be completely proficient in all Vedic knowledge. So, he gradually studied, and he grew up a little bit when he was sort of a youth. He met one Vaishnava, Narahari Thakur, who was a very famous associate of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Narahari Thakur said, you should go to Jagannath Puri and you should take shelter of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu before he departs from this world. And so he was considering doing that. He actually asked Narahari, can you initiate me? And Narahari said, no, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has already requested that you be initiated by Gopalabhana. So I will not initiate you. So he left for Puri. Actually, as he was about to leave for Puri, his father died. And so he couldn't go. He stayed to perform the last rites for his father, and then Narahari asked him that now you have to settle with your mother. And so the mother was looked after by the son and her father, who was I think there are other sons, there are other brothers. So then, when he went to leave, he heard that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had actually disappeared. He had actually left the planet before he could take shelter. So he was really felt, he was just extremely unfortunate. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared to him in a dream. And Lord Nityananda appeared to him, because they both departed, and they said, that don't despair, go and take shelter of Gadadhara Pandit, and he will teach you the Srimad Bhagavatam. Anyway, Srinivasacharya, he then went to Puri, and when he got to the Gopinath temple, he met Gadadhara Pandit. And Gadadhara Pandit, of course, he was lamenting transcendental separation, because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, was very, very dear to him, he said. And so he was just always shedding tears. But when he saw Srinivas, he thought, oh, this will be, his mood brightened a little bit, because he thought, well, now I can at least fulfill one of the last instructions of Lord Chaitanya and teach Srinivas the Srimad Bhagavatam and Krishna Leela. So he got out his Srimad Bhagavatam, Gadadhara Pandit, and he said, Srinivas, I cannot teach you from this book, because I have cried so much when I'm reading it that you cannot see any of the writing in this book anymore. All the ink has only been paid and smudged. In fact, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to read that same book, and his tears had also flooded that book. So that book, that Srimad Bhagavatam, his copy, the whole copy, is unreadable. So he said, well, first we'll have to get another Srimad Bhagavatam. So they sent a message to Narahari, can you get us another copy of the Bhagavatam? And Narahari sent a message back, yes, we have one here, very fortunate, so you can send Srinivas and he can, you know, come and get it. So it's not like you know, these days you just, you know, every ashram, you know, copies of Srimad Bhagavatam very easily available, thanks to Srila Prabhupada. In those days it was, you know, if you can get a copy of Srimad Bhagavatam, you're doing very well, or something like that. Srinivasa Chara, he went back another week, secured the copy of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and just after that he heard that Gadadhar Pandit had left the planet. So he was disturbed. Actually, while he was in Puri, before he went back, he visited all the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who were still living, knowing that they would leave the planet soon. And then he went back and then he heard the Gadadhar Pandit had left. So he was just, you know, rolling on the ground, just thinking, I'm so unfortunate. And so the Gadadhar Pandit appeared to him in the vision, in the dream. You know, that's okay. You know, go on. You know, you go to Vrindavan, you take shelter of Rupa and Sanatana, because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he'd actually sent a letter to, you know, previously to Rupa and Sanatana, saying that, you know, one day Srinivasacharya will come here, and when he comes here, you know, you train him up in this Vaishnava culture like that. So he didn't want to give, that was the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Gadadhar Pandit, you know, he said, you go on, you take shelter. So while Srinivasacharya was, well, Srinivas at that stage actually, while he was in Mayapur, he then went and visited all the different associates of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu there. He went and saw Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's wife, Vishnupriya, who was still living. He was very impressed by her chanting. She would chant one mantra. Every time she would chant one mantra, the Hare Krishna mantra, she would place one grain of rice in the plate. And she would chant the Hare Krishna mantra, place another grain of rice. At the end of the day, that would be her meal. The rice grains were there. So he associated with such persons. Vishnupriya, he went to see Sita, Advaitacharya's wife, and he also went and saw Janava Mata. So when Janava Mata had previously gone to Vrindavan, Rupa Goswami had asked her, you know, when you go back and when you see Srinivas, you make sure he comes here in a hurry, that, you know, don't let him delay, because I don't know, I'm getting very old, I don't know how long I will be here or how long we've got the sanatan, so tell him not to delay. So she said that to Srinivasacharya. So he then departed. On the way, he actually he visited the birth site of Lord Nityananda Prabhu, took association with the great Vaishnavas there, associated with Nityananda. He also saw Abhirantha Kaur, who was a great associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda. Abhirantha Kaur had a whip which was made out of bamboo, and he whipped Srinivasacharya three times, which was great mercy, because it was said that anyone who was touched by that whip of Abhirantha Kaur would immediately develop his love for God. So he got three whips. He was in ecstasy. Anyway, so then he, you know, pushed forward, and just when he got to Mathura, he was about 3 or 4 days out of Vrindavan, he heard that Sanatana Goswami had previously passed away And then he got to actually Vrindavan, and he heard that Rupa Goswami had indeed passed away as well. So he was just, at this day, he was inconsolable. He was just, at different times he just wanted to, kill himself, just burn himself to death. He was just so, thinking there was nothing to live for. So he went and sat in the temple of Govinda, and he sat there in trance, just meditating in separation. And then Jiva Goswami came there, and he immediately recognized, he was Srinivasi, finally got here. And then Srinivasi immediately recognized Jiva Goswami. So Jiva Goswami hospitably made him welcome. He took him to his temple, the Radha Damodar temple, and introduced him to many Vaishnavas, and particularly Gopalabhata Goswami, who was to become his guru. And Srila Gopalabhata Goswami took him to his temple, the Radha Raman temple, and he actually he initiated. After some time, he initiated Srinivasacharya, and he revealed to him that in the spiritual world he was Mani Manjari. And Gopalabhata Goswami himself was Guna Manjari, or sometimes said Anga Manjari. And he revealed to Srinivasacharya that you are this Manjari Gopi. Mani Manjari, you always engage in the service of Guna Manjari, which is Gopalabhata Goswami, and together we serve Srimati Radharani in the spiritual world like this. So he enlightened him in the various details of his internal worship, and he used to perform that practice, trying to meditate upon that serving internally as a Manjari Bhava. Or Ragatmika, Bhakti, he practiced that as well. And because Rupa and Sanatana, of course, were no longer present, they had asked Jiva Goswami that when, Srinivasacharya comes here, you have to train him. Because when Sanatana Goswami left the planet, then Rupa Goswami, he knew that I'm just in too much separation from Sanatana. I will not be here for very long. I cannot stay in this world for too much longer. So he knew he wouldn't be there. And so he said, you get Jiva Goswami. So Jiva Goswami, he actually trained him up in understanding the Vaishnava literatures and Narottam Das Bakur had already been studying under Srinivasacharya for about a year, and then after those two, then Shyamananda appeared there. So he came there. His name is Dukhi Krishna at that stage, Dukhi Krishna. But after they were trained up by Jiva Goswami and a very, very expert Vaishnavas, then Jiva Goswami gave Narottam Das Bakur the title Thakur Mahasaya, so Narottam Das Thakur Mahasaya. He gave Srinivas the title Acharya, Srinivas Acharya, and he gave Dukhi Krishna the title Shamananda, because he was very expert at pleasing Srimati Radharani. So they became the best, the most exalted three disciples and students of Jiva Goswami. And Janavamata, she had asked previously, she said, Jiva Goswami, I want your best three disciples to, distribute the books of the Goswamis in places like Bengal and Orissa, because there the Vaishnavas have embraced Vaishnavism, but they don't have the philosophical literatures to sort of back up their sentiments. So you send the Vaishnavas to make things really solid like that. So when they were Jiva Goswami also asked them to study all the 12 forests of Vrindavan under Raghava Pandit, who was actually previously the Gopi Kanishtha in the spiritual world, so they also studied there. And when they had finished their studies, then they took permission from their gurus, and they loaded up the original manuscripts of the Goswamis and some of their associates on this large bullock cart, drawn by four very strong bullocks, two men, to drive the cart, 10 armed guards. All the books were, sealed and locked in this wooden box put on the cart, and then that was actually covered in a special type of wax to, seal it from the weather. So they left, and they went to, after many, many months of travelling, they arrived in a place called Gopalpur, which was in the province of in the district of Vrindavanapur, which was ruled by King Birhambira. So we see here that which ones have they done so far? We've covered disassociating mind from everything material, and possibly cultivating association with the spiritual masters. So they've taken that, cultivated very strong association with their Shiksha and Diksha gurus and other saintly devotees in Vrindavan and all throughout. Now, in their showing mercy to others, they're distributing that Krishna consciousness with this trio of friends, so extremely close to each other. Their relationship with each other was extremely close. And in this way, serving the Shiksha and Diksha gurus like this. So now they're going to distribute this Krishna consciousness to all living entities. So what happened is, when they actually got there, the king, Birhambira, he was actually, although he was the king of the province, he was also a great dacoit. And he used to have these astrologers, and they could tell that some wealth coming into the kingdom or was coming close. So they said, there is this bullock cart coming, and in the treasure chest there's a treasure which is more valuable than gold. So you have to, you have to rob that. So he had his men follow them, and when they went to sleep, they took the chest, when Srinivasacharya, when they woke up in the morning, of course all the books were gone. I'm not sure, they must have taken the card, no idea, I don't know what they did, but it was all gone. So they were just, imagine, the original manuscripts, the lifetime of work of the Goswamis had been stolen. They were so disappointed in themselves, So Srinivasacharya, he wrote a letter to Jiva Goswami, told him everything that happened, and he said, I promise I'll get those books back. So he sent Narottam and Shamananda, you go and preach in, Bengal and Orissa, I'm going to stay here and I vow that I will get those books back. So anyway, so he stayed there trying to find out who did it, and he met this one Brahmana. And this Brahmana, after a few days, he mentioned that the king of this province regularly holds these meetings discussing Srimad Bhagavatam. And Srinivasacharya said, maybe that's where the books are. So perhaps you could take me to one of those meetings. So the next day he took him to the meeting, and this pundit used to recite and teach the Srimad Bhagavatam to the king and so many people. So Srinivasacharya, he sat there and he wasn't very impressed, and every day he sat there silently for 12 days. He didn't say a word,
But he was very impressed. He spoke up and he said, your teaching of the Srimad Bhagavatam, you're not even following, the actual text of the book itself, nor are you, referring at all to the previous acharyas such as Sridhar Swami, and therefore your rendition of the Srimad Bhagavatam is totally unauthorized and not very extra. And the king is asking the pundit, what is this? Here's this Brahmin saying about your teachings. This upstart doesn't know what he's talking about. I am teaching the proper, Srimad Bhagavatam. Anyway, the next day, Srinivasacharya came back and the pundit was teaching something even more confidential. No doubt, Vishala, yes, I know the real nectar. And Srinivasacharya again spoke up. Now you're teaching something even more confidential, but actually you have no access into this at all. So the pundit got really disturbed. Oh, so you know so much. So you come up here and you speak on Srimad Bhagavatam. Let us see. So Srinivasacharya, he got up and he started to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam. And he would, recite the verses in these beautiful melodies, just hearing the melodies that he would recite, everyone was captivated. And then, he was just speaking. And they asked him, keep speaking, so he spoke for hours and hours and hours. And everyone was convinced. In fact, even the pundit, everyone was in ecstasy. Even the pundit, he was in ecstasy. He never heard such a wonderful recitation. So the king said to Srinivas, you please stay here in this palace. So he stayed in that palace overnight, and the king had his meal, but Srinivas had already eaten. So he took a little fruit, so not to offend the king, but then, when everyone took rest, the king was listening in Srinivasacharya's room, and he could hear him chanting. He was completely captivated. He could hear, so much bhava, emotion, feeling in his chanting, very, very impressed. And then in the morning, the next day, again, he heard Srinivasacharya speaking on Srimad Bhagavatam. And after that, he approached him. He said to Srinivasacharya, actually, you're the king. I'm not the king. In your presence, I am nothing. In fact, I dedicate myself and my whole kingdom to you. You are the real king. And so Srinivasacharya, he initiated the king and his wife and his children and the pundits and so many others. Everyone wanted to take initiation from Srinivasacharya. So, and then he admitted, he asked, Srinivasacharya told him his mission. I've come here to recover. I'm looking for some books that were stolen. And the king admitted, I took them. I took those books. And then he said, but when I think about it, because I stole those books, I've got your association, so I would do that sort of thing again and again and again. And Srinivasacharya said, no. He said, no, you actually don't have to, you don't need to do that sort of thing in order to get my association. In fact, sinful activity like that is a great impediment for devotional service. So the king promised that he would never do that sort of thing again. So Srinivasacharya, he actually stayed there, and in that kingdom, specifically, they had no problem from foreign rulers and that, because in many parts of India, the foreign rulers and other different factions and what have you gave them a lot of trouble. But in that kingdom, there was not even a trace. The king dedicated the entire kingdom to serving the Vaishnava orders of Srinivasacharya. And he used to have different spies that would go around. There was a law. Everyone had to be Krishna conscious.
and he would have spies that would go around, and if they found that someone was not Krishna conscious, they would be asked, you either become Krishna conscious or go to another kingdom. So Sri Vasacharya, of course, he wrote much to Jiva Goswami and everyone was in ecstasy. And after some time, he went back to Vrindavan and so did Narottam and Shamananda, and they met up again and they took some further studies under Jiva Goswami. Sri Vasacharya, that is his Gosyanandi. That is the activities, that is how we serve the spiritual master. That is how we follow in the residence of the Brajabhatis with our external activities. Because when one who follows in the footsteps of the Brajabhatis, they do it externally and internally. So externally means that they preach Krishna consciousness, distribute, book distribution, they used to hold big festivals constantly. Everywhere they went, they would install deities, had big festivals. Shamananda Narottam and Srinivas, there's one of their big preaching tactics. Everywhere they went, there were constantly festivals and constant, we'll install a deity. Big festival. If one of the Vaishnavas departed this world, big festival. Everything was an opportunity for a big festival, and so much vishala and so much kirtan, plays, very, very nice. And in this way, everyone was thoroughly attracted. But you see here also how, described in the purport, that generally one doesn't associate with materialistic persons, but here Srinivasa did. He associated with the king and actually converted him. If one can do that, then that is good, otherwise one shouldn't. But internally, how does Sri Vasacharya in his role as a Bhajananandi? He used to meditate that, yes, I am Mani Manjari and I am serving Guna Manjari, and we serve Srimati Radharani. So one time he was meditating like that and he was trying to, envision the water sports of Srimati Radharani. And while he was doing that, he actually, perceived all the gopis and Radharani, they were having water sports. And his spiritual master, Gunamanjari, was there. And Gunamanjari, Gopalabhati Goswami, he noticed that Srimati Radharani's nose fin had fallen in the water. And so he sort of looked towards Mani Manjari and he said, go get that. So, Mani Manjari, he dove in the water and he was trying to find this nose ring, but he couldn't find it anywhere. So he was searching actually for 3 days. For 3 days he searched. All the while he was sitting there in trance. And of course his wives were coming, up to him, because he had 2 wives actually. You remember, he had 2 wives. He had 2 wives, his first 2 children died. Boys, he had other boys and some girls, and his one of his all his wives and his children, they all took, became his disciples, and they also became spiritual masters and took disciples themselves. His daughter Hemlata, she initiated both men and women, very, very powerful Vaishnava. And one day we'll see that, hopefully not too soon, where the women will also be so powerful, they become spiritual masters and initiate and preach Krishna consciousness and perform jagya, all sorts of things that will happen, we'll see. So the precedent is there. Srinivasacharya, for 3 days, and his wives were coming, he hasn't eaten, he hasn't drunk, water, he'll die. So they called a physician, and the king came, and others came, and they're all standing there, here he is in trance, you know, but internally he's in the water looking for this, you know, coming up and then looking for this stud. And because, you know, there's a difference in the time between the spiritual world and what goes on here. So anyway, they called for Ramchandra. Ramchandra was his very, very dear friend as well. They were so intimate, they were considered to be one soul. They were so close, they were actually considered to be one soul in two bodies. So Ramchandra, he said, it's okay, he's in trance, you know, he's not dying. And he sat down and he started to meditate as well. And he went in and there he came at the same spot of the Jamuna and he saw, you know, Srinivas, you know, Mani Manjari, because he was Karuna Manjari. And he said, I will help you. So by helping him, they found the nose ring, which was, you know, it was actually hidden under a lotus leaf. And at this stage, Srimad Radharani, of course, and the gopis, they come up. And, you know, the gopis had just finished dressing Radharani, and she was just, you know, where's my nose ring? And then Guru Manjari comes up and here's your nose ring, like that, just in time. And then, as Guru Manjari, Karuna Manjari are watching, when Krishna comes and takes Radharani and, you know, scuffles off into the groves of Vrindavan. So, you know, they were in ecstasy, you know, there's Krishna, there's Radharani, there's a water sports like that. And then they just both come out of the trance and they turn and looked at each other and they embraced each other and they cried and they laughed and they rolled around embracing each other. You know, they just both had this, you know, wonderful vision of you know, Radha and Krishna and their pastimes in the spiritual world. There was another time where, just a couple of quick stories. There's another time where he was meditating upon Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his internal meditation, and he was in his meditation. He saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he offered him a beautiful garland and sandalwood paste, and he was fanning him. I think we've seen that at 7 o'clock at night, right? Srinivas is on one side fanning the Lord. So he was fanning Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he became so ecstatic that his body just erupted in ecstatic feelings. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw this servant fanning him, you know, just with ecstatic symptoms all over his body. And he became so pleased that he took that garland off and he gave him that garland. And when Srinivas Acharya, when his trance broke, he was sitting there and he had that garland on. So he took the garland off because he didn't. He didn't want, you know, always, he didn't want everyone to know, you know, so they were generally a little embarrassing, you know, so they sort of hide what they're doing, you know, they don't want to advertise it. So he took that garland and hid it somewhere so no one could see. And just one more quick story. He also, one time he was meditating, and in the meditation he saw Srimati Radharani and the gopis, and they were playing Holi with Krishna, where you throw, you know, coloured dice and you get the syringes and you squirt coloured dice like this. So they were, you know, pelting Krishna, and Krishna was pelting them, but Krishna was getting the upper hand. So Radharani and the gopis, you know, they saw, oh, there's, you know, Mani Manjari, help us, help us. So he came over and he was loading up Radharani with the, you know, the dice and the, what have you, and they were pelting Krishna like that. And then Krishna was pelting them back twice as strong, you know, and that, they were just, it got so much into it that the ground started to shake, you know. So then because the ground was shaking, it was so, you know, wild that his trance broke. And again, when he woke up, he was just like multicoloured, you know. this time, you know, people come and say, you know, just look at the meditation, you know, he's like, what sort of meditation is this, you know? So people sometimes understood that sometimes it's hard to hide. But this is the life of, a few little snippets from the life of Srila Srinivas Acharya. So today is his disappearance day. And so we're following his footsteps by literally just exactly what it says here in this verse. if we can live our life like that, just in the same way, associate with devotees, make really good friends with devotees, preach in their association, material life disappears, you have an ecstatic life. That is, and then serve the spiritual master and the acharyas by book distribution, you know, Harinam, big festivals like this, prasadam distribution, is the same thing. And all the meanwhile, always meditating on the pastimes internally of Sri Sri Radha Krishna. Sri Radha Chai Ki Jai.
Jai.